Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Doug Currier, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're discussing legal and practical considerations for managing difficult employees. Welcome, Doug. Thank you so much for joining us.
Tawny, thank you for having me be here.
I am really excited to talk about today's topic because, unfortunately, I think we have all worked in work environments where we've had to deal with difficult employees. I'm sure some people are laughing as I say that because you may know that Doug and I work together. And when we talk about difficult employees, we're not talking about each other. I promise you, we work very well together and enjoy each other's company. But we've all had experiences where we've had a difficult person in the office. And I think it's important for listeners to recognize that this not only creates issues culturally within the organization, but it can also lead to difficult issues from a legal standpoint. So Doug, for those of our listeners who haven't met you before and haven't had the opportunity to listen to past shows, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and the work that you do at Verrill?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I have been an employment lawyer, I hate to admit it, since the late 1980s, always at Verrill, and represent companies in all aspects of labor and employment law, ranging from just proactive advice to contract development to contract disputes to discrimination suits, wage and hour and ADA compliance, just the full gamut of matters, and also traditional labor matters as well, union organization matters and grievances, contract negotiation, things like that.
Perfect. Well, Doug, you know, let's jump right into this topic. And I think that the first thing I want to understand is that when we use the term difficult employee, what do you mean when you say that? What does that encompass?
Well, Tawny, you know, we both experienced this when a client calls us and they're just beside themselves because they just want to help someone, you know, be the best they can be at work. And it just feels as though they're always at odds and just it's just not working out. And, you know, obviously we ask them to sort of share with us what their experience is. And oftentimes, you know, we see sort of the same type of pattern where they describe, you know, sort of a wide range of sort, what I'm going to say personality types. One is what I would call sort of the person who's just always unhappy. And it just seems as though that, you know, they're just always negative. They're always talking about how dissatisfied they are with this, that, or the other thing. They're always sort of questioning management. If there's change happening, they're very resistant to that change. They often are the sort of the person who, you know, assumes the worst about, you know, what people say or do. And then there's a, sort of a variation of that is the person who's sort of almost intimidating, like a bully who tends to be very rude and abrupt and demeaning to their coworkers. And it always seems like things have to be done their way. And with that, you often find that the people who work with that person are just don't want to avoid the person. They find them unapproachable. So sometimes instead of asking them to do their job, it's just easier to do things themselves. And it's just because it's just too painful to address issues with that. And then there's sometimes someone who just seems as though, you know, work's not their priority, that, you know, they tend to be the ones who are always late or absent a lot. They fail to let you know what's going on. They often are the ones who take too many breaks or they're slow to return from a break. And sort of a variation of that is the person who is very capable, but they often just do what they need to do to get by. And so you might talk to them and they improve for a while, but then they slip back into their old habits and often are a master of making excuses that it's always not their fault, but you know, someone else has put them in this position. And then, Tawny, the last one I would have is what I call the gossip, which is that person who feels compelled to know everyone's business. They make it a priority to share the news, often with their own editorial comment. And for them, often accuracy is just not that important. And so when I talk about the difficult employee, we're all human in nature, and we probably, frankly, all have some of these characteristics. But it's when they start to interfere with a person's effectiveness at work. And that's what we're talking about.
No, absolutely. I think that those are some really good categorizations of different people that we're going to find at work. And you make a really good point that we're often going to find some employees who have a multitude of these characteristics sprinkled here and there, and that each of us likely also have some of these characteristics in our day-to-day work. I'm sure we have some listeners who are thinking to themselves, the eternally positive HR directors and COOs who are saying, well, you know, that dissatisfied employee, I always look at them as the canary in the coal mine who are giving me a better sense as to, you know, the temperature of the rest of the team. And I think it's great if people can look at the positive attributes that come with these negative. But I think oftentimes HR professionals find themselves in a situation where after a certain period of time, they get, fed up, honestly, with dealing with some of these personalities and issues. So in my mind, you know, let's cut to the chase. Doesn't it make the most amount of sense to just fire these individuals as soon as we see the traits that indicate that we're going to have problematic employees? So we know at-will employment means we can terminate them for any reason or no reason. So doesn't it make sense for me just to terminate them?
Well, employment at will is a little bit misleading because notwithstanding the fact that someone may be an employee at will, doesn't mean you can just let them go for any reason whatsoever, given that it's illegal to terminate someone for any job protected characteristics. So you can say someone's an employee at will, but that doesn't mean you can terminate their employment because of the color of their skin or their religion or because they have a disability, you know, their race, ethnic origin, because they've participate in jury duty because they've had a workers' comp claim. And there's a long list, as you know, and a lot of our listeners are aware as well. And there's also this protection for whistleblower activity. So, you know, often someone who, for example, is always unhappy, maybe always complaining, might be complaining about things that are a violation of law or involved health and safety and would be protected activity. The thing is, though, that two things really. One is that if you have someone who falls into this category, that doesn't mean they don't necessarily have a lot of positive characteristics that would be beneficial to the organization. And then there again, just because as I described, there's legal risks with terminating someone's employment without, you know, going through your termination checklist and making sure that you can show that there's no sort of wrongful bias or wrongful motive and that the documentation is in place that supports your decision. So in this day and age, it's not as simple as saying, oh, this person's really being problematic, so we're just going to get rid of them.
I guess I was expecting that because otherwise the show would be really short today and we'd be saying thank you so much for participating. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Doug Currier, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're discussing legal and practical considerations for managing difficult employees. So, Doug, you've set forth the different types of difficult employees. You've explained why simply terminating them probably doesn't make sense. Let's say I take your advice, and instead of terminating every difficult employee, I decide to figure out the best way to manage these individuals. In my mind, is it simply sit them down and say, stop being so difficult or stop being so childish or stop doing X, Y, and Z and just get the job done? Is that insufficient in your experience?
Yeah, it is insufficient. And the reason is that, you know, people are complicated and there's a lot of different reasons why they may be the way they are. I mean, they can have some personal insecurities. They may have a need to exercise control over their circumstances. Some people thrive on creating chaos. Some people have had bad behavior in the past that's been rewarded. And managers need to think about that, whether or not they've rewarded bad behavior by, for example, excusing someone from doing the job because it's just easier to do it yourself as opposed to ask that person to do what they're supposed to be doing. Or are they giving someone a bonus or a pay raise who's not doing the job well because it's just easier to do that as opposed to have a difficult discussion about their performance? And so, the long and short of it is to just simply say to someone, hey, you know what? This is your job. Just do it. Or to say something to the effect of, you need to get your act together. And if you don't like it here, go somewhere else. It's just not going to work. And so you really need to be more thoughtful in your approach as to how to work with people. And it's and a big part of it, Tawny, is having a real discussion with a person where they feel heard. I mean, in all our relationships, it's important to us that someone listen to us. And that's true with our spouse, and that's true with our kids and our friends and the like, but it's also true with our coworkers. And so to the extent you just say to someone, get over it, do your job, they're not going to feel heard in this relationship. They're not going to feel respected in this relationship. And that's just going to drive a bigger wedge between you and the employee. And so, the cornerstone of what we're going to be talking about is really figuring out strategies so that that person feels that they are respected, that they're being listened to, and that they're being taken seriously, which doesn't necessarily mean giving them what they want or agreeing with them in all instances, but it is a big part of being able to, develop a foundation and the credibility with that employee that you can build off of to have a successful working relationship. And that's really what we're trying to focus on.
Doug, one of the things that you mentioned earlier that's a little bit outside of the scope of what I plan to talk to you about today, but I think related, and I'm sure that our HR managers are thinking it, is that situation where you have a manager who is added to the situation by rewarding bad behavior. Let's take a step away from just the problematic employee, but the manager's failure to manage in that situation. How would you go about helping the manager to understand that they've rewarded bad behavior?
Well, I think, and first of all, too often they learn the hard way. It's like where the manager comes in and says, I've had it. I can't stand it anymore. Or coworkers, some of the coworkers are threatening to leave. We need to fire this person and we need to fire this person now. And so what do? We obviously take a look at the file to see if the documentation supports the proposed termination decision. And then what do you see? You see that the person got the pay raise and you see that they got above average review and you see that they got a bonus. And then you have to have a conversation with the supervisor where you basically say, look, your documentation doesn't support what you're telling me. It doesn't support the fact that this person has poor attention to detail or whatever the concern may be. And the supervisor says, yeah, I know, but I didn't want to have to get into it. But if you look, the person got only an average or above average rating and my really strong employees got, outstanding ratings. It's really clear. I didn't think they were as strong and that may well be, but they still are viewed as being above average or above average. So you can't then move from there to terminate their employment because they'll point to the fact that, they just told you that they had a workers' comp claim or they just complained about some unsafe condition and would argue that that's the real motive for the termination decision. And so what you want to do is be able to make sure your supervisors understand, your managers understand upfront the importance of doing really good evaluations. Actually, let's take a step back. The importance of doing a really good job of hiring employees and figuring out who is someone who is going to be an outstanding employee. Because if you can do it at that point, you're way ahead of the game. But then once the person's hired, really understanding, am I giving a cost of living pay increase or is it a merit pay increase? What's this bonus for? Does the person deserve the bonus? Am I giving an evaluation that fairly ranks the person? And then you also have a situation where they call up and say, look, you know, the person's not even doing, you know, a third of what we wanted them to do because we had to take it away because, you know, they complained about it so much, or they just would never get to it, saying they were always too busy, but they shouldn't have had any problem getting to it. The work demand's not that great. And what you've seen is you essentially allowed them to redefine their own position by excusing them from having to perform those duties and those tasks. And so it's really a question of upper management, making sure that your frontline managers understand the importance of the things that we're talking about in terms of not rewarding the bad behavior.
I think that's a really good kind of overarching umbrella aspect that all of our HR managers and COOs should be keeping at top of mind while listening to us today. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You wanna get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home. Sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot. Driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe. Put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you, so you can try on new styles in the comfort of your own home. Stitch Fix is on your terms and priced to fit your budget. There's no subscription required, ever. Keep what you want and send back anything you don't. So, isn't it time you started nailing your look? Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for women, men, and kids. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Doug Currier, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're discussing legal and practical considerations for managing difficult employees. Doug, prior to the break, we talked about what a difficult employee looks like, some of their characteristics. You told me it's best practice for me not just to terminate them as soon as I start seeing some of those characteristics in an individual. And also, as an HR team member, how to hold managers accountable. I'd like to continue along the line of how do we work with employees instead of just terminating them as soon as we see the problematic situation or characteristics. If a supervisor, however, fails to appropriately manage the employee, as you were discussing, fails to put stuff in documents, fails to hold an individual accountable, what kind of larger impacts can that have on other employees?
Significant, it would be my answer. I mean, when you think about it, if you see someone who's behaving badly and doesn't seem to be held accountable, it's demoralizing for the coworkers. I mean, if you have someone who's like not really working particularly hard while they're, you know, really trying to get the job done, that can be demoralizing. If you have someone who's constantly complaining and griping, others don't want to hear about it, that gets demoralizing. It also could be contagious. You can find out that it starts to bring out the worst in others. It can impact productivity. If someone's like, well, if this person's not going to try and no one's going to say anything, then I, you know, what's the reason for me to try to bust my butt? You know, it can also lead to claims by other employees. I mean, let's say you've got someone who's using their cell phone all the time when they're not supposed to be. And the manager's like, it's just so difficult butting heads with this employee. I'm just not going to bother calling them out on the fact that they're using their cell phone while they're supposed to be working. But then they make a point of addressing that issue with some other employee. You can imagine that person's like, well, this feels like discrimination because I know, you know, John over there is on the cell phone and no one seems to say anything. And then I use my phone once and suddenly I'm called on the carpet. And so inconsistent treatment leads to discrimination claims. And then likewise, it can lead to claims by the employee. And often I find that's because the employer doesn't deal with the situation. And then maybe a new manager comes in and does try to deal with the situation. And the employee says, well, obviously this new manager is biased because I'm just doing the same thing I've always done. And it never was a problem before. And now I'm suddenly in trouble with the new manager. So therefore it must be because this new manager doesn't like, you know, my age or my gender or whatever the case may be. Or sometimes what you find is, you know, the managers, you know, they just eventually just do something stupid. It's situation where they don't really address it. They don't really address it. Then they've had it. And then they say you're fired. And that just comes across as really arbitrary. And the employee again can say, you know, I got fired for something that I've been doing all along, or, you know, you complained about the fact that I've been doing this all along, but you never bothered to address it with me really. And then all of a sudden it gets to the point where it's so bad, I have to be fired. That doesn't seem fair. And so all of that just tells you that, you know, if you don't deal with this, it can infect your business in a number of different ways and to lead to some very caustic claims.
Doug, you mentioned kind of some legal risks here. Even in the course of the last few minutes, you mentioned discrimination claims when you're holding one employee accountable and another one. You're not holding them accountable, and that could be based off of any protected classification that employee may fall within. And earlier in the program, you discussed kind of the difficult employee falling within protected categories, whether it's a whistleblower protection or a workers' comp protection. Are there other laws that we should be keeping kind of at top of mind when we're dealing with difficult employees? Or are we really just looking for, you know, make sure that we're treating comparators equally so we don't see a discrimination claim?
Yeah, I mean, we're all familiar with the state and federal discrimination laws, and obviously they're very relevant to this discussion. The American Disabilities Act is as well. If you've got someone who's not showing up for work, or showing up late a lot, then you might find that you got to also focus on the state and federal family medical leave laws, Maine's paid family leave law. I mean, there's a lot of those laws may come into place. And we've talked about the Maine Whistleblower Protection Act, which is, you know, often cited by plaintiff's attorneys because of the leverage that goes with that, which is to, you know, make the issue that, you know, their client is the one speaking up to try to protect the, you know, the patient or the, you know, the customer or their coworkers. And that caused resentment on by the employer. And so the person was retaliated against. That's, you know, very common claim. And then also under the National Labor Relations Act, even if there's no union involved, employees are protected if they engage in concerted activity. And you have to consider whether or not the person is, if they're always complaining, are they complaining on behalf of a group of employees that it would be protected speech? So, you know, we could have another whole program talking about the various laws and the legal implications, but I think it's enough for as a takeaway to understand that there are a lot of different laws that may come into play if you don't work well or appropriately with the employee situations that we're discussing.
A thing to keep in mind too, if you're a listener who's in a state that doesn't have a whistleblower statute or an anti-retaliation for reporting perceived illegal activity, in most cases, we're seeing a lot more judge-created law from a standpoint of public policy, that even though we have these at-will statutes that an individual can't be terminated for a reason in violation of public policy in many more states than what we had previously seen. When we're talking about public policy, Doug, it leads me to think about, well, what about internal policies or practices? Are there things that an organization should do or have in place before the difficult employee is employed that could help to limit exposure under some of these laws?
Absolutely. So first of all, I think every employer in their handbook should have an ethics/no retaliation type policy. And many already have a no retaliation provision in their anti-harassment policies, and that's important, that's necessary. But they should have a broader policy that encourages, actually makes it a condition of employment, really, that any concerns about health and safety or illegal or unethical practices be brought to the attention of management, to emphasize the fact that not only would we not retaliate against someone who engages in this type of behavior, but we actually expect you as part of your employment to bring these things to our attention, because it doesn't do anyone any good if they're going on and we're not addressing them. I think also it's important to have an alternative reporting mechanism in connection with any type of harassment or a reporting type policy that doesn't just say, you know, report it to, you know, your supervisor or report it to HR, but rather says something to the effect of, you know, bring it to your supervisor, HR, or if you do not feel comfortable doing so, or you felt you have done that and it wasn't properly addressed, then, you know, here's an alternative reporting source. I think it's also important to emphasize the importance to be able to work effectively with coworkers and customers. You got to be a little bit careful there because of the National Labor Relations Act. And so you got to work with your attorney to word that the correct way. But I think it's important that everyone understands that's an important expectation of employment. I also think you need to be very clear about an employee's obligations to report absences and the reason why they're absent, so that if you're talking about trying to address a situation where someone's coming in late or missing work, that there's a clear understanding as to why they were out and whether or not it's a protected absence under one of the many laws that protects employee leaves.
Those are all really helpful practices, Doug. For individuals who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Doug Currier, labor and employment partner at Verrill. And today we're discussing legal and practical considerations for managing difficult employees. For those listeners who join us weekly, they know that I love hypotheticals. So, Doug, I would love to jump into a hypothetical right now and try to put some of this guidance into effect. How are we going to deal with the situation? Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's say that you have an employee, we'll call it the gossipy employee, who's spending lots of time chatting up coworkers, not working, and actually has recently started a rumor that there are going to be deep cuts in the accounting department and that the organization is actually looking to use an outside accounting firm. There had been initial discussions about this, but no decisions have been made. But at the same time, this employee's just blown up the whole concept and everyone's in an outrage. What, if anything, are you going to do about this situation, or would you recommend that the Human Resources Department do, Doug?
Well, I think, obviously there's a lot that goes into it based on, you know, what's the history of this employee and And so it helps inform the best approach to it. So I would talk just more generally about some, you know, regular things to keep in mind when you have situations like that. The first is don't avoid the problem. You know, a lot of times when you have someone who, you know, repeatedly engages in this type of behavior, it's not addressed, and then it just becomes worse. And sometimes the excuse is, well, I didn't actually see the employee engage in the behavior, and so therefore I just wasn't in a position to address it. And so in my view, you need to address it. And, you know, how you go about that may be defined in part by whether or not you saw it yourself. You know, so if you observed it yourself, you might sit down with the employee and talk about what you observed. If you didn't observe it yourself and you're worried about the individual getting mad at the coworkers for, you know, ratting on him or her, you know, you might speak in more general terms about the importance of you know, not gossiping and the like. But you just have to understand that to the extent you tolerate the behavior, you're condemning yourself to continue to experience that behavior. And to the extent you don't address it, it basically sends the message that, you know, this behavior is somehow, you know, okay. But the next thing I would say, segueing to sort of the specifics of talking with the employee, is you got to make sure you don't just react to what you hear and assume a worst about the employee because it just sounds like something the employee would do. And so if this is someone we always think is a gossiping employee and someone says, oh, you should hear that, you know, John was talking about the accounting department, you've got to resist the urge to haul John in the office and say, I've talked to you about gossiping and spreading rumors and they're really harmful. And you did it again. And here's your written warning. And if it happens one more time, you're fired. And the problem is that we don't actually know whether or not what was reported was true. We just have one person's perspective on what happened. And so you need to take the time, even though you think you're pretty sure this is the type of thing John would do, to figure out the who, what, where, when, why, how. You know, it's really important not to assume any facts. And if there's some aspect of what is being reported about John and the gossiping that doesn't really add up, you can't just sort of brush by that thinking, oh, that, you know, I still think this is something John would do. Because if you do all that, if you get it wrong, or if you don't even give him a chance to tell his side of the story, then you are setting yourself up to being accused of you know, having some bias, because it seems as though you weren't really concerned with the truth, but rather you're just concerned with how quickly you can get John into trouble based on what occurred. And so what you really need to do is think in terms about having a conversation, you know, with John to, you know, to have a thoughtful discussion about what happened and what we need.
You know, Doug, there's definitely a lot to unpack right there. We need to take a quick break, but I want to get back to really unpacking kind of all elements of what we just talked about. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
With the legislative landscape consistently evolving, business owners and HR managers face increased challenges running their business. Whether it be earned paid leave in your state, those retirement savings programs that are popping up around the country, or dealing with paid family medical leave, Paper Trails is here to help your business be compliant. Paper Trails consists of a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech, payroll, and compliance services across New England. At Paper Trails, there's no 1-800 number, and they strive to treat their clients like neighbors because they are. When a question or need arises, Paper Trails is right around the corner. Whether you're looking for accurate payroll and bookkeeping, assistance with local and federal compliance challenges, or additional services like benefit administration and employee onboarding, Paper Trails has the tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while they handle the paperwork. Visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour to learn more.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco will send send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin. And all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation. 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free silver American Eagle coin.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Doug Currier, and we've been talking about legal and practical considerations for managing difficult employees. I want to jump back in, Doug, to our discussion about the hypothetical situation where we have the gossip at work who is making things really difficult. And, you know, I think I came into it hoping that you were going to say, you know, that situation, it stinks from an operational standpoint. Logistically, this individual has likely made it more difficult, but let it go and see if it gets better over time. But you've told me that we need to not assume the worst, but it seems like we're going to have to do some type of investigation. Before I get the employee who's been accused of spreading all this gossip into a room to talk to him, her, they, is there something that I should be doing beforehand before I haul that person into a room?
Yeah, I mean, and that's really, I mean, to have a thoughtful conversation with someone, you need to have a thoughtful plan about how you're going to have that conversation. And too often what I find is that, you know, busy manager, lot going on, get this, they're upset to hear this report. Oh my gosh, is it leaked out about this change in the possible change in the accounting department? This is a mess. And, you know, get John in here, you know, and they haul him down and then they just, without really thinking about what they're going to say or how they're going to say it, they just sort of launch into it. And so what I really emphasize is the need to not to resist the urge to just haul the person into your office, to understand that a poorly thought through presentation is just going to make it worse. But instead think about, all right, who's going to be present? When's a good time to do this? You know, where should it be done? What should we say? What is our word choice? You know, how am I going to make this employee feel as though, you know, we're trying to address something, but at the same time, still respect them as a person, to anticipate their reaction, to consider their perspective. You know, it might be that someone told this to John and John was sort of reacting because John's in that department and is scared. You know, just having a really trying to understand perspective is important. And also, again, this idea of trying to make the employee feel heard in the discussion, but while at the same time, you know, making sure the person understands what appropriate boundaries are at work in terms of behavior.
Doug, I mean, you've provided us with some really thoughtful things that we need to consider before we get into the interview. And you've sprinkled in some things that we need to be really mindful of during the course of the interview about how to ask questions and not to make presumptions. Are there other things that I should be keeping at top of mind if I'm the HR individual who's going in and having this discussion with the individual?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what I would really emphasize is this shouldn't be an attack on the employee. This isn't about winning or trying to prove the employee is a bad person. It's really about trying to help the person be successful in the organization. And so, as I alluded to, it's not about labeling the employee. Oh, you know, you're always gossiping. In fact, you should stay away from the you word. You know, you did this, you did that, because that just makes people defensive. And it makes it harder to have a real conversation. Instead, you need to focus on what, you know, the organization needs as to what the person, as opposed to what the person's doing. So I need employees to, you know, respect each other and not gossip. It's much more effective than saying you're always gossiping and spreading rumors. And also, I think that it's helpful to help the employee understand the impact of the behavior on others in the organization. So let's say that this employee had been, you know, spreading rumors about a coworker, you know, explaining then in a non-confrontational way how that behavior affected others or that other person, I think would be really, really important. And also the consequences of the problem in terms of the impact on the organization, the impact on coworkers, and what's going to happen if this type of behavior continues. And the idea then is by not saying you were doing this or you're doing that and having them focus on and trying to understand the impact on the organization, the perspective of others, you can then together craft a solution where they're more likely to try to own that solution.
So let's say that as opposed, you get into this meeting, you follow all of this advice to the T, but the employee, instead of wanting to work with you to craft a resolution here, instead what they do is they say, I understand that's what you want for the organization, because you're not using you're doing this, but you're saying we're looking for an organization that has trust and respect. And they say, but that's not what Robbie's doing. Robbie isn't treating people with trust and respect, or Robbie's sharing rumors too. Robbie actually shared that we were going to get rid of the marketing team and you didn't do anything for them. What do you do when an employee begins to blame others for their bad behavior?
Yeah, and that's a common defense mechanism. And I think, and there's variations of it. To the extent someone's saying, hey, Robbie's doing the same thing, you just, the response I would suggest is something along the lines of, look, just like people don't know that I'm talking to you, you're not going to know if I'm talking to someone else. So don't just assume you're being singled out. But what you need to do is focus on sort of what you can or cannot do to make this a better, healthier, more enjoyable place to work. And if they're saying, you know, you're picking on me, you can say, look, you know, here's the deal. We just need to live by the saying that two wrongs don't make a right. So if someone's doing something that bothers you, you still need to stay above the line and be respectful and positive in your interactions with others and the like. And if you really think it's bad, what someone else is doing, if really problematic, then you can bring it to my attention and I'll address it. But what we don't want is to be having, you know, just because someone else is doing it, others saying, well, then I'm going to do it too. That just doesn't work.
In that same discussion where you have an employee saying, you're picking on me, is there an issue or concern, or how do you respond when the individual says, I've been doing this for years and I've never been called to the mat for it and it's been accepted and you haven't done anything? Has the organization created a problem by handling this matter maybe differently than it did the first time it happened with that employee, that this is an ongoing issue with the employee and we're only now suddenly going to start responding to it?
Yeah, I think if that's the case, you know, we've been part of the problem and we failed to address it, then I just think we acknowledge we've been part of the problem and we failed to address it and this is why, and then indicate that these expectations are now in place or they're now going to be enforced. My recommendation generally, if you're going to suddenly change the rules, so to speak, is to let people know before you then discipline them for failing to meet those expectations. And sometimes instead of addressing it with a particular individual, you address it on a company-wide basis. Do you say, look, you know, we've had this policy that says don't use cell phones during work time. We've been slack in enforcing it, but we feel as though it's become a problematic and it's really impacting productivity. So we just want everyone to know that going forward, our expectation is that, you know, cell phones shouldn't be used during work time. And so that way, then if it happens again, you can say, look, we told everyone, we're not singling you out. We told everyone that this was the new enforcement policy and we really need everyone to respect that policy.
Let's go back to the hypothetical. And if the individual, let's say that they did indeed gossip, they spread the false information, are we just firing them? Is that the only course of action? Or what are some other potential courses of action? You can see I just want to get rid of this person, but I have a feeling you're going to tell me that there might be a better way.
Yeah, and again, it's all so fact specific. And at the same time, we want to make sure that I think we want to make sure we're treating people fairly. And I think we want to make sure we're treating people consistently. And we want to make sure we have all the facts. And, you know, without really diving into the weeds of that particular situation, there are other alternatives short of termination. And we all know about written warnings and performance proven plans. But I also think that there's, you know, opportunities for additional training and coaching and the like that should be considered. But as managers, to the extent you indicate a willingness to go that path with the employee, you just need to really make sure you follow through and do what you say you're going to do.
And with that, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Today, I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Doug Currier, labor and employment attorney and partner at Verrill. And today we've been discussing legal and practical considerations for managing difficult employees. Doug's provided us with what I think is a great roadmap from how to create policies and practices to limit exposure under a host of different state and federal laws that could be implicated when dealing with difficult employees. He's provided us with guidance as to things we should consider when we are met with the challenges of a difficult employee, and also provided us with guidance about what an investigation should look like. So Doug, you've told me terminating the person may not be the best course of action, and instead some type of written warning, some coaching, maybe some additional education. Does that meeting or that education, is that the end of the situation, or should I be following up with the employee, or is this kind of in the rearview mirror and we don't deal with it again?
No, I mean, I think that as you know, with any relationship, you need to work on that relationship, and it's not a one conversation and you're done. You know, I think you need to monitor the employee's behavior or a job performance to make sure the improvements taking place that's needed. I think it's important to provide feedback to the employee on how they're doing. And a lot of times if there's just silence, the employee just assumes they're doing fine. And the next thing you know, the employer wants to get rid of them because there hasn't been that improvement. I think up front, you need to emphasize the need for sustained and continuing improvement so that the employee really understands that this is an ongoing process. And I alluded to this before, but to the extent you say you're going to do something like check in with the employee weekly or arrange for accommodations, or we're going to provide the person with some educational opportunities, whatever the case may be, all of which are good things, you need to make sure that you follow up and do what you say you're going to do. Too often, the managers get busy, they don't do their part of the plan, and then they want to let the person go. And the person's like, well, look, if you provided me with that educational opportunity, or if you had had those interim meetings, I would have been in a better position to succeed, but you never followed through. And now you're telling me I've got to go. And that's not a conversation we want to have. So you really have to be very disciplined in that aspect.
Doug, thank you so much for your insight today on what is a very difficult question for most HR professionals. And I'm not trying to, you know, do some double statement about difficult employees and how difficult they are for employers and for HR professionals, but you've done a great job of getting us some really key points to help limit exposure and liability. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.